1 a.m. I'd like to call to order the meeting for the Washington State Fish and Wildlife Commission on May 15th. And we do have a quorum. We will go through the roll call after open public input. This meeting is hereby called to order.
Thanks, Barbara. And we're kicking off the meeting today with public input. Looks like we already have one hand raised to kick us off from Bob Blake. So we will start with you, but we do have a mix of folks who are dialed in on their phones and using the computer. We are using that hand raise feature during this portion of the meeting. So if you're dialed in on the phone, you can use *9 to raise your hand and we'll get you unmuted. And if you're on the computer, you can look for that hand raise down at the bottom. So right now, I'm going to name the person who's starting, and then I'll say the person who's on deck to go next. And you do have 3 minutes. So we're going to start with Bob Blake, and Hayton is on deck. And Bob, I think you are still muted on your end. So,
can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Good morning, commissioners. This is Bob Blake. I am an advisor to the Walthall Bay Regional Fisheries Advisory Group and also the president of the Walthall Bay Gillnet Association. And what happened with our Willapaw season this year and with all the contra-virus things that's going on, we don't know if you're going to have any recreational fishery, period. Nobody has an idea here. And I would just ask that if it does happen, there is no recreational fishery, is there some way the commission can direct the department to roll those fish over to the commercial fishery, which we can keep going? If that's possible to do. I know it starts with the commission level, but rather than totally undate the hatcheries with fish that they have no way to control or no, you know, that's the only way we're going to control them is by harvest. And then also, I would ask this, and I know it's late in the season, and I talked to people from Region 6 to represent us at the PFMC, and that is to get observers on the charter boats to observe what happens with the coho and the difference in mortalities on the release fisheries. Numbers are atrocious, and I know a few of you have heard this, and the new ones, it's fairly new to you, and it's a lot to learn. I understand that, but I think we need to do something about the hook and release on the coho in the ocean. It's absolutely atrocious. Our season is really restricted this year on the commercial side in Willapaw Bay because of our natural coho, and those natural coho are getting hooked and released in the ocean and thrown back over. And we've heard some atrocious stories, but I think the only way you're going to get a true feeling and to see what's actually going on is to have the observers on the charter boats. And I think the department is responsible for doing that. We have paid for our own observer program through a landing tax on the gillnet fishery. And I'll remind you that we're fishing for the consumers of the state of Washington. And I don't want to get in a big whole political route about it, but if you think about it, I think less than 1% of the population actually recreational fishes for salmon in the state. And I think that needs to really be recognized. And to answer Commissioner Anderson and Commissioner Linville, yes, you was live. I heard what you had to say, but I think it's real reality. But I do thank you for that. And with that, I'll end my testimony. Thank you, and you all have a good day.
Well, thank you, Bob. Are there any commissioners that have a question for Bob before we go on to the next person?
I do. I would, Madam Chairwoman.
Feel free. Go ahead.
My question is, because I'm not a fisher person, I am not sure what Bob meant when he said what is atrocious about the lion caught coho out on the ocean. I'm sorry, it's just my ignorance.
Well, no, it's not ignorance. It's the dumb questions are the questions you don't ask, and that is absolutely a great question. We've got reports that sometimes there's anywhere from 60 to 90 silvers released to retain 6 or 8 mark coho. And that mortality rate, if they're hooked in the tongue, the eye, or in the gills, they're dead, period. And also, it goes on and on. But since we are not meeting our natural escapement for natural coho, we got to stop at some place. And we're not the only ones, but Grays Harbor has the same problem, the North Coast, as well as the Columbia River fish. So that's what I say. We need to get the data, period. And I thank you for that question.
Any other questions for Bob? Okay, next person.
All right, we've got Hayton next with Deborah Chase on deck.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, so I am Allie Hayton. I'm one of those 1% Bob was just talking about. I'm not even sure why I got this email or if this is the right format for my two cents, but I noticed that on the agenda you were going to be talking about recreational crabbing, and then that got all marked out. So I talked to somebody at Fish and Wildlife about the fact that we can't go shrimping right now, and I could tell he was not a fisherman because he told me it was because the docks would get too crowded. And anybody that shrimps knows you don't shrimp from a dock, and you don't. I'm assuming he was talking about boat launches. So my question was about people that have their boats in the water, and he thought that would be discriminatory because you have to be wealthy to have your boat in the water, which is totally not true. We live on the river. There's a lot of people that have their boats already in the water. We can stay safe by shrimping. We can stay safe when we're crabbing. It's like the whole class is being punished for one bad kid, and so I'm wondering why the crabbing discussion got tabled, and if you see any of this recreational crabbing. I get clam digging. Again, you're on top of each other on a beach, but when you're out in your own boat in the middle of the ocean, you're not going to get COVID. So what's the real reason that we're not going to have a season?
So, Ms. Hayton, this is Barbara Baker, and I just want to make a point. This is absolutely the right place to state your concern, because this is the right place for anyone who has a concern to state it. So, number one, feel free. Number two, the crabbing issue that was postponed on this agenda doesn't have anything to do with COVID. But if you can stay tuned for a few minutes, a little while, but not long, we'll have our director's report. So Director Susewin will be addressing pretty much exactly what you're talking about. And if you have questions after that, we can figure out somebody for you to talk to. Is that satisfactory?
Yeah. I'll probably switch over to my phone so I can listen in the car, but yeah.
Okay, thanks. Next participant.
All right, we've got Deborah Chase up and Shannon Franks, you're on deck.
Good morning, commissioners. I hope everybody can hear me. I hit that little unmute button. This is Deborah Chase with the Mount Lyon Foundation. And I just wanted to say a couple of things. One, I was really happy to listen to both the strategic planning that you discussed yesterday, as well as the public safety issues. And I'm hoping that both items will be presented to the public for more public input as you move along in the process. I encourage you to keep going, especially with the public safety, and we're looking forward to seeing more as you move along. Thanks a lot, and that's all I had, unless you had questions for me.
Anybody have questions for Deborah? I don't see any hand raised, so thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
All right, Shannon Franks, you're up, and we have a phone number on deck that ends in 6774. So Shannon,
can you hear me?
Yes, perfect.
Okay. I'm a recreational fisherman. I guess I'm one of the 1% that Bob was referring to. and I would like to know what percent the gillnet, how many gillnetters out there compared to the public, because it's got to be way less than 1%. There's a lot more recreational fishermen than gillnetters that are using our resource to make money. It's a natural resource. Recreational fishermen put a lot more money back into the system than the gillnet association does. A recreational fish, economically, each recreational fish caught puts a lot more money back into the community than a recreational fish caught. With that being said, I'm an Area 7 fisherman, and it looks like our winter fishery was lost in negotiations north of Falcon this year for the winter fishery for next year. It sounds like we traded that off for a 2 weeks extension on our summer fishery, which this year, which sounds like we have a quota system now. We've never had a quota system for hatchery Chinook for our summer fishery in Area 7. During the negotiation, it's my understanding that the two-week extension was agreed to, and then a quota was added during the closed-door session with the tribes, basically nullifying the two-week extension for the summer fishery and trade for the blackmouth winter fishery. The Stillaguamish Hatchery Chinook program was one of the causes for, or one of the reasons we lost our winter fishery, as I understand it. And I'm wondering why, if the Hatchery Chinook program on the Stillaguamish is an issue, why not just not mark those fish so that they get a bigger return? I mean, that seems like a simple solution. As far as what Bob was referring to about coho fishing and the number of coho, wild coho that are caught and released, the 60 coho per 2 or 3 or 4 Chinook being retained is preposterous. The same issue was brought up during the winter fishery, where they were saying there was 11 encounters for each hatchery fish retained. So that goes against our encounter rate. I fished in the Area 7 for many, many years, and there was a 2 years ago, there was a number of small fish inside here that were being caught and released, but that's an anomaly. That's not normal, and I think it was due to the fact of having 22 million sockeye die in the Fraser, and all that nutrients being washed back out into the Sound. And the following year, you had a lot of fish stayed in the Sound that year. That's really all I have, I guess. The shrimping, I'm wondering if we're going to have a shrimping season in Area 7 as well. I'm assuming we're going to have a crabbing season. But if you're ling cod fishing, ling cod's open, the docks are being used.
Mr. Franks, could you conclude your comments, please?
Pardon?
May you conclude your comments, please?
Oh, yeah. I'm just, as a recreational fisherman and somebody who's paid a lot of money, and my club has donated a lot of money for salmon enhancement, I'm really disappointed about our winter fishery and the way things are being managed. And that's my conclusion. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Mr. Franks? Seeing none.
All right. Thank you. The next person up is joining via phone, ending in 6774. And I think we've got you unmuted.
Good morning. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Good morning, Vice Chair Baker and Commissioners. My name is Brian Love. I'm a commercial fisherman from Brush Prairie, Washington. I really wanted to do this invite face-to-face, but as you know, that can't happen. I'd like to personally invite each of you commissioners on board with me in August to a selective Zone 4 and 5 commercial gillnet fishery. This invite seems to be the only way I can get commissioners to see for yourself that a 9-inch gillnet is a selective fishery. I've personally invited senators, local representatives, members of conservation groups, and various sport fishing group members to come on board and witness it in years past. Unfortunately, no one ever seems to take me up on my offer. I'm pretty sure it's due to the fact that they don't want to witness the truth. As you know, the departments of Washington and Oregon Fish and Wildlife have done studies on this as well. It's been a huge struggle participating in the Columbia River gillnet fishery lately, not knowing what's going to happen year to year, stripped allocation, select areas not working. We've had fishing periods cut short before our quota was reached. And, I mean, a lot of us had really hope for last fall for the coho tangle net. It was a huge investment for me personally. I bought brand new gear just for it because with the family at buoy 10, we were knocking them dead in the sport boat. And I thought, well, good, now we'll get some fishing time up river. And it was a complete bust. It was low water. It was super clear. I only went the first two openings, and there was no fish caught. And we did it right during the day, which I was hoping that's something we can change. I know, I think the last opening they gave maybe an early morning. But I'm just asking you to remember that a change in allocation is not conservation. These salmon we catch, they need to be available for the public to purchase. I'm asking you to please take me up on my offer. Come witness a fishing period. Bring your camera. The late nights and early mornings that we fish in August, the weather's warm. The entrance of the Columbia Gorge is a great place to witness a sunset and a sunrise on the river. I can pick you up from the dock, provide coffee. I could even provide lodging. Anyway, thanks for your opportunity to speak, and hopefully we can work something out with this fishery.
Thank you. This is, again, Barbara Baker. I wanted to point out that this is certainly not your last opportunity to talk to us. And in fact, in late July, July 30th through August 1st, we'll be in Aberdeen. Hopefully by that time, we will be in person. And so we look forward to seeing you there. Any questions?
Don.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, ma'am. Vice Chair, just as a matter of logistics, I want Mr. Love could provide his contact information to our executive assistant for any of us that might want to take him up on this offer.
Thank you. Can you handle that offline, Nikki?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Next participant.
So next on deck, or we've got David McCraney up next, and I don't see any other hand raises. We do have one more. So Heath, you're on deck to go after David. And David, if you want to make sure, there you go.
Can you hear me now?
Mm-hmm.
Hi, my name is David McCraney. I'm from Tacoma, Washington. I'm a Puget Sound recreational advisor to the department and have been a very active participant in the Northrop Falcon process for the past 5 years. That process is absolutely broken and needs to be fixed. In my mind, the solution is for the department to secure its own permit from NIMS so that we don't have to piggyback on the tribal permit. Unfortunately, the the co seems to have kind of gone out of co-management with that system. So it's very frustrating. We've lost, I think we lost 28 seasons last year. Every year it gets worse and we never get them back. So in terms of a specific action, I'd like the commission to direct the department, the director and staff, to come up in a timely manner with a strategy and timeline for the state securing its own salmon fishing permit. We may lose some time while that takes place, but we've already lost more than several seasons by using the existing process. So thank you very much. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. McCraney. Does anyone have a question for this person? Okay, seeing none.
All right, Heath is up next. And if anybody joined a little bit later after we got started, if you are on the phone, star 9 to raise your hand, or if you're joined by the computer, look for that hand raise function at the bottom of your screen. I do know we have a couple minutes to take a few more people. So Heath, go ahead.
Good morning, Commissioners. Heath Heikla for the record. My certainly thoughts are with Chair Carpenter and whatever family situation he's dealing with. Anyway, thank you guys for being there. I did tune into the Fish Committee meeting yesterday, an abbreviated Fish Committee meeting with a shortened agenda. In follow-up to Mr. McCraney's comments, you should have received a letter from CCA and other organizations regarding the situation with Puget Sound, Puget Sound Harvest Management Plan north of Falcon. We would ask that you really look into that as quickly as possible because the current situation facing recreational anglers in Puget Sound, frankly, is untenable. To lose 24 area months of fishing opportunity, it's a devastating blow to communities, to anglers, to everyone who relies on that fishery. And I really encourage you to dig into what the conservation benefits of the complete shutdown of the blackmouth fishery were. And I think you're going to find out that they were, not, frankly, close to non-existent. So that's a real concern. The other item I would ask is I know you've removed the Puget Sound crab agenda item from today's agenda. There are a lot of questions about exactly what is going on in those discussions between the co-managers. I've sent a couple emails now to staff without a response to get a sense for what's the path forward on that issue. As those of you who aren't familiar, in January, a document was provided at a Fish Committee meeting outlining a series of requests, or they were titled initiatives, that the tribes were looking for changes to the state fishery. Other than that document being handed out at a Fish Committee meeting, no other information has been provided to the public. And frankly, there's a lot of questions and not a lot of information about the status there. So it'd be really helpful maybe in the director's report to get a sense for what is going on there with any kind of discussions and what opportunity there'll be for public comment. So that's the end of my comments. Thank you, and I hope you guys have a great day. Thank you again.
Thanks, Heath. Does anybody have any questions for Heath before we let him go? Okay. Are there other participants?
We've got two more folks. Next is a phone number ending in 9739, and we've got someone from the Washington Citizen Sportsman on deck.
Hi, this is Randy Gagan. I fish up in Marine Area 7 mostly. The question, it's actually comical to me that we're basically pitting commercial against sportsmen in this issue, which is more important. Money-wise, sportsman puts way more money into the system than a gill netter. The question, we're trying to protect native fish versus hatchery fish. How often does a gill net differentiate between a native and a hatchery? The answer is easy. It doesn't. It catches everything that hits the net. So that right there, if we're truly trying to protect native fish, then that should be an issue. The purse seiners are the same thing. There is no differentiator what they catch. They just scoop up everything. But I find it's unbelievable that 6 years ago, we were fishing for kings 8 months out of the year. And now with the quota in Marine Area 7, like I say, we're down to 2-3 week stops. So we gave away our winter blackmouth season for a 2 week additional opportunity in August for kings that everybody who fishes knows was a joke. So I really think that the commissioners should start actually fighting for us, the non-tribal fishermen, so that we have opportunities to fish. I mean, everybody spends a lot of money. It costs a lot of money to go fishing. And, you know, if you're worried about the cost, you wouldn't be a sports fisherman, because when you're going out fishing and you're going out there for one fish, it's about $100 a fish. And you know what? I don't care if it's $200 a fish, but we need to have the opportunities to do it. And it's extremely unfair that we are not getting those opportunities. You know, I wish that there was some way that we could not have to negotiate with the tribes, because they have no reason to negotiate with us. I mean, if we walk away, they go fish, and means we're piggybacking off of their permit, we don't get to fish. So basically the tribe is running it, and the state won't back us up. You know, the tribes are the powerful ones. And it goes in point just on this COVID-19. You got casinos opening up. Our distinguished governor calls me up and says, you know, you guys can't be opening. It's not at your phase yet. And they come up with, we're a sovereign nation. We don't have to go by your laws. Well, if they're a sovereign nation, there should be different rules. We shouldn't even be negotiating with them, period. But, like I say, again, I'm one of that 1% that the first gentleman talked about, you know, we're not important. But, you know, we feed people just like a commercial gillnet does. We feed our family. So with that, I'll close it. And if somebody wants to ask me a question, please do.
Are there any questions for this panelist?
And another thing, I'd be more than happy to take one of the commissioners out fishing and prove the gillnetter wrong on the mortality rate of a released fish. I don't even touch the fish when I release them. I have a release item that I don't even touch the fish. And with the barbless hooks, they come out very easily.
Okay, thank you. Are there other people who would like to talk to us?
Yeah. Let's go ahead. It looks like we've got someone from Washington Citizen Sportsman up next, and George Harris right behind.
Good morning, Commissioner. My name is Perry Menchaca. I think I've introduced myself to many of you. For those commissioners that are new, welcome to the commission. I'm sure you were well aware of what you were getting into. Washington Citizen Sportsmen is a coalition of over 8,000 active sportsmen and women in the state of Washington now who have petitioned the governor, the commissioners, the director. We've been involved actively in asking for some resolution to the broken co-management issue. Many of you are aware, and I know Commissioner Grable, you've been involved in this for many, many, many years. In fact, you were one of the three original people that were appointed to sit in the North of Falcon as an observer, which basically was a sham because you had to sign a non-disclosure agreement. So even as an observer, you weren't allowed to report on any of what was going on in those negotiations. We have, over the years, had direct responses and statements from people that have firsthand knowledge that are involved in the co-management negotiations that have said point blank, those negotiations are completely one-sided. At heart of this issue, as many of you know, is that the NOAA process to get permits, and it's not really a permit, as we know, but to get to allow fisheries is fast-tracked because of the Section 7, because it's a federal nexus that allows the tribal permits to go through quickly. In some preliminary discussions that we've had with NOAA, they are willing to discuss some exceptions to policy to have a state permit handled as expediently as a nexus for federal to federal. I don't believe, and I'm going to ask you commissioners to be upfront and honest with the stakeholders right now, has anybody pursued this since the 2016 Coho Gate? We've got copies of the letter. We understand that there was a... I'm sorry, I'm getting in my earphone here, but I'd like you to just explain to the stakeholders briefly what actions that the state has taken to overcome this issue that we have in our co-management process right now. I mean, it's the people are aware of it. It's out in the open, so let's just address it for a moment. Thank you.
Thank you, Perry. Does anybody have any questions?
This is Commissioner Graybill.
Go ahead, Dave.
Not a question, but I don't believe, and Bob Kehoe, I know you are at North of Falcon, have been there with me many occasions, but in a different role, but I don't recall as a commissioner having to sign a non-disclosure agreement as I attend these meetings. And we'd have to maybe check with Larry Carpenter too, but I'm unaware of, I certainly don't recall having to sign any kind of agreement.
So, Perry, this isn't really a chance to have a discussion. This is a chance for you to let us know what you think and what you want us to know. So we will respond. David, maybe you and Perry can discuss this further later.
I just wanted to clarify real quickly, if I could. Commissioner Graybill, I wasn't referring to the fact that you had to sign a non-disclosure as a commissioner. This was back when Phil Anderson selected three people to sit in as observers in the North of Falcon. Those three observers had to sign non-disclosure agreements in order to participate as observers in the North of Falcon. I'm sorry, I wasn't clear about that.
Well, thank you, because that would not be the case in recent history.
All right, so let's keep moving. Does anybody else have questions for Mr. Menchaca? Okay, back to Tess.
All right, next up is George Harris.
Good morning, Vice Chair Baker, members of the Commission. This is George Harris. I'm President of the Northwest Marine Trade Association. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. Thank you so much. I'd like to start first with thanking WDFW and the Governor's Office from all of our member businesses, their customers, license holders to reopen fishing last week, and all of the state access points and WDFW parks and DNR. So that's terrific. Thank you. My comments today are about the Puget Sound Chinook Harvest Management Plan, and I would encourage the commissioners to reread the letter that our association sent to the commission and Director Susan on April 13th. And basically, it's just a summary of our consistent messages and deep concern about the Chinook Harvest Management Plan all the way back to 2017. And our specific request is that the state renegotiate that harvest management plan, and specifically with regard to fin clipping still Guamish conservation fish. That's a successful program for 20 years, but you do not need, for any conservation reason, need to fin clip those still Guamish conservation fish. And by doing that, it totally handcuffs, harms our marked selective fishing opportunity in Puget Sound that I think WDFW should be so very proud of. And as some of the other people providing comment this morning have said, we lost 24 months of winter fishing opportunity in Puget Sound without any conservation benefits. So I would encourage you to reread that April 13th letter, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, George. Does anybody have questions? All right. Our Tess, do we have anybody else?
No, it looks like George was the last person with their hand raised, so I'm going to pass it back over to you for our kicking off the meeting.
Madam Chair, may I just say one thing in response to Mr. Harris's testimony and others concerning the North of Falcon and Chinook Management Plan. I just want to say that, as you know, that was those items were on yesterday's Fish Committee agenda. We had to postpone it due to a family emergency by Chair Carpenter. So there will be an effort, hopefully next week, to reschedule that meeting. And so I would just ask that people on the phone or tuning in just be on the lookout for that. There may not be a lot of notice in advance, you know, it's extremely important, I think, to all of the commission. And so just want to let folks know that. So thank you.
Good thing. Thank you. Okay, we have already called the meeting to order. I think just for protocol's sake and to be clear, I'm going to read the commissioners who are on this webinar, and rather than fumbling with our unmutes to take the roll. So we have Bob Kehoe, Brad Smith, David Graybill, Donald McIsaac, Jim Anderson, Kim Thorburn, Molly Limville, and myself. We are missing Chair Carpenter and hope that things get better for him, but he regrets not being able to join us today. So we'll start with the commissioner's discussion.